This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, this is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, should we raise the minimum age for motorcycle licenses from 16 to 21? So first, we look into what this would achieve in terms of road safety, as well as what ideal motorcycle riding practices should look like. And then, how would this particularly impact young people who may be reliant on motorcycles for transportation or work? Let us know, do you think we should raise the minimum age for motorcycle licenses to 21? Would it make a difference? You can call us 7733-2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. All this coming your way on Inside Story. It is just about 6:08. So to begin at the beginning, in Free Malaysia Today, transport consultant Rosli Azad Khan has urged the government to raise the minimum age of eligibility for a motorcycle license from 16 to 21, basically arguing that 16-year-olds were too young to ride motorbikes, calling for the immediate cancellation of this regressive policy, and saying that the government should encourage an increase in the number of school buses instead, which is safer for school children, and that the education system in Malaysia hadn't been effective in instilling road safety consciousness. This was part of a comment on the latest statistics released by the Bukit Aman Traffic Enforcement Investigation Department, which found that there were 25,958 deaths involving motorcyclists and pillion riders recorded between 2014 to 2020, which is a large number. But another consultant, Goh Bok Yen, has said that basically that the number of deaths are going to continue to rise as long as the government doesn't segregate and restrict motorcycle riders to dedicated lanes. He cited stats showing that an average of 10 motorcyclists are killed every day, four of them between the ages of 16 and 25, which again are very disheartening numbers. He pointed out that it's not an offence for motorcyclists to occupy all lanes in urban and rural highways, regardless of the speed at which cars are travelling, and that it's time to go back, therefore, to the fundamentals of segregating road space and make it an offence for riders to encroach onto the main lane, and that heavier penalties should be imposed on repeat offenders. So that's what we're going to be discussing today. I did want to just say, though, on the point about dedicated lanes, that it's important to acknowledge that whenever we talk about this, we do also hear from motorcyclists who say it isn't necessarily because they want to be on highways or because they don't want to be on motorcycle lanes. It's because our lanes are, well, sometimes poorly planned, sometimes not well maintained, sometimes simply unsafe to use. So there are larger issues here. And even on the subject of younger riders, right, I think that that there's probably more going on here than simply just an age limit. But if those numbers weren't enough, 25,958 deaths in 6 years, four motorcyclists killed every day between the ages of 16 and 25. This year alone, there have also been a number of serious incidents and accidents involving motorcyclists, including, for example, five people being killed, two others seriously injured in an accident involving motorcycles and cars in Penang on the 17th of July. On the 1st of May, there were 92 youths arrested for illegal racing under a special operation carried out at multiple illegal motorcycle racing hotspots in Ipoh. On the 30th of January, two teenagers and two other people were detained for illegal racing. 43 motorcycles were seized in Butterworth. The people there were aged between 15 to 21. So clearly there is something here about the age as well. So let us know. Do you think we should raise the minimum age for motorcycle licenses to 21? Would it make a difference? What else would work to make our roads safer, particularly for both drivers and riders? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Professor Dr. Ahmad Farhan Mohamed Sadullah, Professor of Transport Engineering at USM. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It is 6 13 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn. We're talking today about whether or not we should raise the minimum age for motorcycle licenses from 16 to 21. Let us know the answer to that. What do you think? Would it make a difference? And what else would you like to see to make our roads safer for both motorcyclists and drivers? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now to speak about this is Professor Dr. Ahmad Farhan Mohamad Sadullah, Professor of Transport Engineering at University Science Malaysia. Prof. Farhan, as always, thanks for speaking with us.
Hi, how are you all?
Good, thank you. So, as we said, we're talking about this call for the government to raise the minimum age of motorcycle license eligibility from 16 to 21. What do you make of this? Do you agree?
Okay. We are always simplifying the motorcycle issue in the country. It's a very complex issue. I have personally tried to do some research on it, and we have actually made several recommendations. And of course, usually when the motorcycle issue creep up, this suggestion will come up. Okay, it is not going to be as straightforward because, as you can see, even with the present 16-year-old limit, there are many riders who are riding motorcycle under the age. We can observe this in our taman, in our kampung. People, children as young as standard 6, standard 5 are already going around, zooming around with their dad's motorcycle. So, and if we were to observe the statistics, okay, just based on the statistics, no doubt the 16 to 25 year old is the biggest, is the age bracket that has the biggest casualties involving motorcycle. But guess, the next highest age group is actually 6 to 10 years old. All right, these are all victims. Either they are riding the motorcycle and met with an accident, or they are a pillion and so on. But this is the fact from statistics. So it is a fact that children as young as 6 to 10 years may be riding motorcycle, handling it, and therefore it is not a foregone solution by just raising the bar or raising the age, unless or until we address the roots of the problem. So I guess your next question, what are the roots of the problem? knowing you, Lynn, maybe.
I mean, you know. I have to ask, what do you think it is?
It is something that I will have to share, okay? So so it goes back to their first riding experience, right? We don't have statistics. Again, this is our weaknesses in the country. But if we were to actually do a proper survey, we should ask how many person rides a motorcycle for the first time without proper training, meaning they are not licensed, okay? And therefore, they do not know the road traffic rules, all right? My guess, majority, if not all, okay? So for us who have ridden motorcycle, you know, as a young chap, we ask ourselves, what age was that, okay? It could be just around our house, you know, but this is still illegal, and you rode the first time without knowing the actual skills as well as not knowing the traffic rules. So under road safety, you are incompetent. So majority of our young riders or first riders are incompetent, right? And when they are incompetent, they are deficient in many ways. So they do not know the traffic rules, they do not respect it, and therefore they will become risk on the roads, okay? And the problem is, okay, these people will graduate. Okay, in time, they will ride around and so on. They will be more skillful. And at by 16, and as they come to 16-year-old, they will get a license. But, you know, we have, hard habits are difficult to die. Ala bisa tegal biasa. So they will actually continue to ride the way they did. For example, they don't stop at junctions. We see this everywhere. And sad to say, sometimes the habit goes to even when they are driving a car or even driving a lorry. They don't stop anymore because they are used to assume others will stop for them. And that's the behavior of majority of the motorcyclists. So this creates a lot of havoc on the road. And to me, that is the root of the problem. Okay, but I have to also make some criticism on our licensing scheme. I have never been satisfied with what we do. As you know, they only take the traffic rules, okay, which of course they can memorize. There's no effective of it. You know, they don't really understand it. And sometimes and the test is not on the road, as you know. Motorcycle testing is not on the road. It's only in the litar, it's in the track, which does not challenge them to face the real traffic. I have, of course, talked to JPJ many times. There are a lot of issues, logistical issues, risks. You have to manage it. Okay, and the numbers are just high in the country. So all these, there are issues of behavior, attitude, but there are also institutional issues. So the outcome is that we have such motorcycle riders on the road. So I guess, to me, that has to be addressed somehow.
So,
I'll stop there first.
No, so that somehow, right, I think is the key point that the rest of our interview is really going to have to examine, because, of course, the counterpoint to this is, okay, so we're talking about lowering the age, but then others are also pointing out the issue here is that we shouldn't be sharing roads. Cars and motorcyclists not probably shouldn't be sharing roads, and yet this is the reality in Malaysia. So considering this, considering your point about bad habits, considering all these different things, then we need to start at the so how, right? Where do we begin?
Okay. I think we have to start with the parents. I somehow blame the parents, because who allow the kid to ride a motorcycle at the young age? Must be the parents, either out of apathy or out of ignorance, or just, you know, they don't care, all right? But the motorcycle most probably will be of the parents. And this is sad, you know, when the parents do not take responsibility or do not impose discipline for the student. And sometimes it is out of convenience, because they want the kid to buy something for the, you know, from the pasar or from the kedai, and they will just ask him or her to ride, and of course the child will be, you know, happy to do so. But this create that situation. So it's not, that's why I started off with say it's a complex issue, it's a society issue, and we need to really educate everybody at all levels to understand what is happening and how we need to manage it. So when social engineering is concerned, you need all sectors. You need the advocacy of the police, you need the media, you need the local people, you know. They must take ownership. They don't want their children to be, you know, and now these people will graduate to the rempit arena, which is sad, you know, because to them that is the testimony of their greatness and their skill. But as we know, you know, they might be skillful, but they do not know how to anticipate risks, and these are all incompetent in the sight of the law. So that to me is important. But of course, enforcement will help, you know, if periodically enforcement agencies come to Taman and make roadblocks, they will not go, you know, as blatant as they do now, because now they don't fear anything, you know. They still are fearful of police, and we cannot manage when they are actually assembling in big groups like they do in Penang, you know. They do that every weekend, not only in Penang, in every localities. But to manage that group will be difficult, but to manage local situation, the local IPD can actually handle it better. And you take them by surprise, you know, bring, sometimes do some simple roadblocks, and then they will have some fear. And of course, we can complement that with society, leaders of the community should talk about it and so on. It's not going to be easy, but I hope this will be the manifesto of some of our political parties in the next election, because they do usually not come into the picture, you know.
And if we look specifically at systems and structures, right, is our road infrastructure designed in a way that allows motorcyclists to be able to ride safely? Because we do often hear of, poorly maintained or ill-planned dedicated motorcycle lanes.
Yep. All right. Before I go into segregation, it is upon the engineers, the road authorities, to make sure no potholes, okay? Because we must remember, while we have been talking about the manners of the motorcyclists, they are also the victim on roads. There are people who are law-abiding, they are competent, but they still ride in the same traffic mix, okay, in the same mixed traffic, and they are still subject to a lot of risk. So we should not allow more risks. And what are the risks? The risks are potholes, the risks are ill-maintained roads with sand and debris, curve where they can slip. And these are all danger risks on the road that the road authority, governed by professionals who are engineers and technical team, should not allow to happen. I always give lectures to professionals, even my own students at the School of Civil Engineering. These are your responsibilities. You must make sure this does not happen. So that is first and foremost. So you must make sure maintenance is up to scratch, and you monitor and you know where the potholes are, and you therefore mend it timely. Okay. When we talk about the other infrastructure, again, another solution that are easily being brought forward is segregation. And this all started from our success in the last century. I think it was late 70s or 80s, where we introduced the segregation on the federal highway. And data showed, yes, we really reduced remarkably the number of crashes. But not so now, okay? If you go on the federal highway, what do you see? You see motorcycles on the main traffic, even though it is illegal for them to do so. Why do they do so? Because the capacity of the motorcycle lane has been reached, okay? So the numbers of motorcycles have grown so much in the country, they are now overtaking already our cars. So for them to go into the same motorcycle lane, they have exceeded the capacity. So it can also be dangerous in the motorcycle lane, especially when we have big bikes, especially when they are not following the road, the speed limit, and they are overtaking each other on the road. And sometimes you have also bicycles in there. So this is bringing another dimension, okay? But if we manage it well, I think we can have some success with it. And to my mind, as an engineer, motorcycle lanes are only effective for highways, okay, where there are minimum number of access points. Okay, that's why it was successful in Federal Highway. And of course, you need to maintain it, because sometimes it goes under a tunnel, it's not maintained, it's dangerous, it's dark, and so on. So we had that problem, and because of that, motorcyclists didn't want to use. And of course, they are susceptible to water logging and flash flood. So these are all issues that we have to tackle, but there's always a solution. But to have a motorcycle lane on other types of road is quite ineffective, because there will be a lot of entry and exits, you know. So we have tried this in many places where we put not fully segregated, but only lane segregated, where it's not fully segregated. It was not successful. Okay, so I think we need to continue experimenting, but along the way, to me, public transport still has a role. Okay, why we have these big numbers? Because public transport is still poor, and people feel motorcycle is the best option for them. And unfortunately, we are not able to address the issues of the riders, which is what we have discussed in the beginning of our talk today. And also, we have not done really well in the infrastructure side, but that is much being influenced by the capacity issues. Okay. So that's why it's very complex, Lynn. We are trying to come up with a policy at the moment. We are working with MIROS and with MOT. We are trying to address all the issues, but it cannot be solved overnight. Overnight, we can definitely increase our enforcement so that we can actually address the loose points and we can definitely improve our licensing manner. Not necessarily the age, but the whole syllabus and the way that we ensure them to be a more competent rider that know how to anticipate risk and to manage risk. That, to me, that's very key. They must know how to anticipate risk and they must also know how to manage risk. Then we will have a safer road for motorcyclists and everybody else.
Prof. Ahan, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Pleasure. See you again sometime. Bye-bye. Take care all.
You too. That was Professor Dr. Ahmad Farhan Mohamad Sadullah, Professor of Transport Engineering at University Science Malaysia, weighing in on essentially what's up with road safety, particularly from the point of view of motorcycle riders. This is coming as a suggestion has come through to raise the minimum age for motorcycle licenses to 21. And we've been asking you whether it would make a difference. What else would you like to see to basically make the road safer for everyone? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And actually, quite thematically, just giving you a heads up on something happening tomorrow, Allianz is back with another motorcycle sweep campaign aimed to help M40 and B40 cope with the rising prices of goods. Participants of this campaign will stand a chance to win groceries valued at 10,000 ringgit when they purchase or renew a motorcycle policy with Allianz. To find out more about the campaign, hear from Sazali Abdul Rahman, Deputy Chief Sales Officer, Allianz General Insurance Company Malaysia Berhad, tomorrow at 9:15 a.m.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn. And today we are talking about whether or not there should be a raising of the licensing age, basically the minimum age of eligibility for a motorcycle license from 16 to 21. This is coming from transport consultant Rosli Azad Khan in FMT. But, you know, it's something that has been talked about before and is part of a wider conversation, really, about road safety for both riders as well as drivers. And we started off our show by basically looking into the factors as to why it is that bad riding habits have become what they are and how it's a complicated issue and that licensing alone maybe isn't the way to go about it. But we've also been asking you, should we raise the minimum age for motorcycle licenses to 21? Would it make a difference? And what else would you like to see happen in order to make our roads safer, basically for everyone? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. So we've got a lot of messages that have come through. Dawn says, increasing license age would just mean increasing more unlicensed riders. KW says, makes no difference. You're just getting mud rambits who are a little older. The problem is still there. Ban them right away. And I think, so I'm not sure about banning right away, partly because of actually what we're going to talk about in our next segment, which is the role that motorcycles do play for a fair number of people who require transportation and for whom cars are out of reach and public transportation isn't widespread enough or isn't, you know, basically isn't enough, isn't accessible enough. So there is that. But yeah, I think increasing licensing age without necessarily looking at our entire syllabus and what exactly we're testing for, what we're teaching, that is problematic. However, some others are just in favour. So CF says, yes, the government should raise the age for motorcyclists, maybe to 18 years old. Meanwhile, we also have Bernard who says, yes, I agree that age should be higher to curb reckless driving by teens for bragging rights, but e-hailing riders need to have harsher penalties for breaking the law as time pressures are incentivizing them to break the law, especially when it comes to running the red light. Meanwhile, Rosvinda says, the single most important thing for me would be to remove all those food riders off the road. They're the biggest menace. Increasing the age limit for license is useless because our enforcement is almost non-existent. So a few interesting points here. You know, I hear everyone on the frustration when it comes to food riders. I think that we, on an average drive to work, you are going to see a fair amount of behavior that is exactly exacerbated by this time pressure, right? By this need to get to places quickly in order to make a living. There are all these things. And while I hear you on the frustrations, I also have a lot of sympathy for the job itself. I don't think it's easy. I don't think it's necessarily the most lucrative or safe or protected. So I don't know about removing all food riders, partly because what then, especially for people who rely on these deliveries or who have come to rely on these deliveries? I don't know. I don't think a straightforward ban or removal of everything is necessarily the way to go. We're also getting a lot of other messages coming through to do with parents, which we'll get to later. Wink says, raising the age has very little impact if there's insufficient enforcement. To this day, we see motorcyclists without helmets. Companies in the gig economy also have a responsibility to ensure that their team rides safely and even reward them for doing so, which I think is perhaps more in line with how I would like to see this go. We also have, let's see, this from Alberto, who says, on road safety for motorcyclists, one essential step would be to replace the H-shaped short beams that support the highway metal dividers and fencing for cylindrical ones. Those beams are razors on a bike fall, severing and maiming limbs. Studies on road safety have shown cylindrical ones to reduce the severity of accidents involving motorcycles, which is very interesting and in line with what we were talking about with our earlier guest as well, when it comes to how we design roads, how we engineer roads. So keep those thoughts coming. Should we raise the minimum age for motorcycle licenses from 16 to 21? Would it make a difference? And what else would, in fact, make that difference to make our roads safer? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. So another component here, of course, is that if you raise that minimum age, what does it do to people who are younger and perhaps from, for example, the B40 community, who rely on motorcyclists to get to school, to be able to work? And I think that that's what we wanted to explore next. Joining us for that is S. Arulchelvan, Deputy Chairperson of Party Socialist Malaysia. Arul, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Lynn.
So to start off, what did you make of raising the age of eligibility for motorcycle driving licenses? Do you think it's a feasible option?
I think if you look at the laws in this country, you know, every time when there's a tragedy happens, you know, the first thing people think about is making changes to the law. But if you look at the employment age, anyone above the age of 14 can actually start working. And the Malaysian law allows 14 to 16 conditional working. And above 16, you can be a full-time worker. And that is the law, you know. That means an age for someone who wants to ride a motorcycle is also 16. And we see that a lot of this is also a class issue, you see, because a lot of people who are riding motorbike is actually a cheap way of communicating, a cheap way of moving, and is actually affordable. And of course, in many other countries, people use bicycles. But, you know, Malaysia's climate does not really permit people to use bicycles, you know, like in Europe or Australia and all that, you know. So in that sense, motorcycle seems to be the most popular, cheap for the working class and for the young working class, you know. And I think if you want to raise the age from 16 to 21, I mean, that's going to put a lot of burden on this community.
Can I ask you to expand on that, right? How important are motorcycles really as a mode of transportation, particularly for, as you say, young working class people?
I think today's working class are made of a lot of gig workers. And it's very different from those days. You know, those days, you have to work in factories and all that. Today, a lot of young people actually work in the gig economy. Most of them are riders. You know, and you see, there's one scenario which you have not seen before. You know, now you see Malaysian roads, people horn, you know. You see motorcyclists horning all the way, you know, something like what's happening in India and Bangladesh. Actually, there's a lot of work pressure on these young people. They have to deliver on time. And we are consumers. We all expect them to be there, our food to be delivered on time. And there's so much of pressure on them. They don't earn very much. And because of all these things, a lot of them actually use motorbikes. I know people who even borrow motorbikes to be riders, okay, to be riders. And I think, and most of them pay installments monthly. You need to pay maybe about 100 ringgit, 200 ringgit to get them, to get. So I think it's a bit, so a lot of today's workforce, young people, take up this kind of job. And I think they play a very important role in the economy. And the numbers are growing, as you can see, in the roads.
So considering then that many young people do rely on them for travel, whether school or work or, you know, to participate in the gig economy, as we've been talking about, what impact then would this restriction have on them?
I think it will have tremendous restrictions, you know, on the poor people. Because, you know, they have been already suffering. They can't afford to buy cars or, you know, and public transportation is not accessible everywhere. And a lot of places, even employers prefer motorcycles because they can go into smaller roads, they can avoid jams. So that is why motorcycles actually something which are more practical in transporting things, you know. So in that sense, if you increase the age, it's going to impact strongly on this community, this B40 community. And this community which relies so much, you know. And, you know, there's also a lot of school dropouts, you know. And school dropouts have nothing to do with motorcycles. People drop out from schools in the age of 15, 16. They go into employment. And where do this group of people go, you see? And this is the job they have. So don't take away. I think we have to find other ways to address those issues, which I think important issues on safety. But it's not just blaming on motorcyclists is the solution for it.
How would you like to see this conversation framed or thought about? Because it's becoming very clear through the messages from our guests earlier, from you now, that this is a very complicated issue. It's not a one-size-fits-all. There's no silver bullet. So considering that we're talking about things like safety, like employment, like all these various things, I guess my question to you is, yeah, how would you like to see this conversation framed or talked about in a way that could be productive?
I think for once, I think that this road is a shared property of every, you know. It is not that those who drive the bigger vehicle, like the lorries, can bully the cars, and then the cars can bully the motorcyclists. Motorcyclists can then bully the pedestrians. No, that shouldn't be the way. I think one way is to have proper dedicated roads, you know. There's not much dedicated roads in Malaysia for two-wheelers, for motorcyclists and for cyclists, actually. And in a lot of countries, you have that, you know. You have a dedicated road for motorcyclists and cyclists. I think that will improve a lot of things, you know. And it must be safe, actually. If you look at the Kersas, being a motorcycle rider myself, looking at the Kersas motorcycle lane, it's actually very unsafe. So it's not just building a motorcycle lane, but it's to ensure there's safety to it. There's enough lights. There's not porthole, because I think the motorcycle lanes are normally not treated as the same class as the normal roads. So I think this is something we have to look into it. Dedicated road for motorcyclists and cyclists. And then there must be enough facilities so that motorcyclists can pass through big highways and all that, you know. There must be avenues for them. That would actually help motorcyclists in their safety. And of course, there's also an education process, I think, not only for motorcyclists, but all drivers, you know, how we respect motorcyclists, how motorcyclists respect the other pedestrian. There must be a two-way process.
We're speaking today with S. Arochelvan, Deputy Chairperson of Parti Socialist Malaysia. This is part of our show today, talking about motorcycle riding safety in light of a call to increase the eligibility age for a license from 16 to 21. And we've been particularly speaking about how that might impact young people from working class backgrounds. We'll continue our conversation after this with Arul. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:51 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn. We're talking today about road safety, particularly from the point of view of motorcycle riders. And this is as a call has come for the minimum age of eligibility for a license to go up from 16 to 21, which, you know, I think is one way of going about it, but certainly not the only. And we've been spending this part of the show talking about how this decision, if it went through, would actually impact young people from working class backgrounds because, you know, it limits accessibility to transportation, basically. So we've been discussing that with S. Arochelvan, Deputy Chairperson of Parti Socialist Malaysia. We're continuing that conversation now. So, Arul, if we go back to the person who made the suggestion, Rosli Azad, he also asked the government to consider increasing the number of school buses instead as an alternative. What did you make of this suggestion?
I think when you're talking about school buses, we are just focusing on those going to schools. I think the question which I raised earlier was, a lot of young workers are from the age of 16 onwards. So school buses may not really resolve the issues. And I think school buses in Malaysia, I think, is mainly more suitable for those in the younger age. I see those who are above 15 would prefer to either cycle to school or and especially go by motorcycle. And maybe school buses are more conducive maybe in an urban setup, you know, but not really in a rural setup. You know, how many buses are you going to send to rural areas just to send them to school? So I think it's not a very practical idea. But of course, you know, if you ask me, having more school buses is good, actually, you know. But again, the whole question is who's going to pay for the school buses? The parents have to fork money for them, because most students today above the age of 12 go by bicycles in rural areas or go by motorbikes. Yeah.
You touched on this earlier and I wanted to focus on it. Has there been enough of a focus on encouraging better riding safety among motorcyclists, particularly young ones?
I think we are in a survival mode. I think a lot of young riders, they need to earn money and they have deadlines. So I think when we talk about safety, we also should talk about better working condition for them. They should be better protected under SOCSO. They should be registered, you know. So there should be enough safeguards so that they're not harassed at work, that they should meet certain, there must be reasonable time for them to travel to spot A to spot B, you know, and they should be reasonably paid for that trip. I think that are also equal important points besides other safety measures. Of course, a person who earns better salary would be able to maintain his motorcycle better. He would be able to use the money for better care, you know. But then primarily, what do you need money for? You need money for your food, for your lodging. You know, these are the Maslow theory, you know, of what you need. So you have to look at that. So the best way is to give them better working conditions, pay them better, and then you can ensure that they use that money to protect themselves. And of course, on the other hand, dedicated roads, other safety measures need to be improved. You can't lump a motorcyclist, a cyclist, a lorry and a bus and a car all in the same road and say it's a fair world out there. You know, it's not.
In closing, is there anything you'd like to leave us with?
You know, a lot of people who look at motorcyclists as a menace, a lot of motorcyclists look at other car riders as a menace as well, you know. So I think there's a lot to do with respect in the road, you know, respecting that we are all sharing the space. And how do we, because I think the motorcyclists, riders play an important role, you know. They consume less petrol, they are less environmentally, they bring less disaster to the climate as well. So in a certain sense, that you shouldn't look at them just as a menace. We should see how to recognize them as well as educate them in the process. And they should be given equal safeguards and better treatment at workplace as well. Yeah.
Arul, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
That was S. Arulchelvan, Deputy Chairperson of Parti Socialist Malaysia, weighing in on this call of raising the age of eligibility for motorcycle riding licenses from 16 to 21 and discussing specifically how it would impact younger people from working class backgrounds. So we've been asking you for your thoughts on this, essentially. Should we raise the minimum age and would it make a difference? And more specifically, are there other measures that you would like to see in place in order to make the road safer for everybody? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. We have a lot of messages coming in. So Munif, saying actually what I wanted to say earlier, but better. I like how so many are attacking food riders, but zilch when it comes to people who are inconsiderate, mean and rude towards said food riders who arrive even a bit late. However we address this issue, a bit of empathy can go a long way towards holistically solving it. They annoy me on the road too, but context is key to begin designing an effective solution. And that is exactly it, right? And it's something that our guest, Arul, just brought up as well, that pay is important, protection is important, time pressures, and understanding what exactly is going on. All of that matters in terms of trying to come at a point of safety in a way that actually addresses all these different things. Meanwhile, we also have, like we said earlier, a lot of points coming through about parents. Let's see. We have Crispy Bacon, who says, I think it should start with the parents. Parents allowing their kids to ride around on motorbikes as if it's a bicycle is the crux of it. Why do they hide away the car keys but are loose with the motorbike keys? Meanwhile, Ken says, I really have to agree with Prof that parents are to blame for underage riders. Fines and punishments should involve parents of the kid as well if proven guilty. And I think our guest earlier, Prof Ahan, mentioned that very often it's a necessity sometimes. You know, it's like, oh, I need you to go get groceries. I just need you to be able to ride out and do this because I'm too busy. And that's how you get underage riders starting out at first going short distances, right? Probably between house and the kedai and then coming back or whatever. But over time, getting bolder, going further. And yeah, I think that, again, it is clearly a problem. Parents do obviously play a huge role, but there is also the holistic side of it, right? Why in the first place are people handing over the keys? You're right. These are the questions that we don't seem to have answers to. Throwing up questions also is Wendy saying, rather than just raise the age, we should ask ourselves why there seem to be so many wannabe mudrumpits and why motorcycle lanes and roads are unsafe. Although I get annoyed at times at motorcyclists, we have to ask ourselves why are they using the highways? The other issues include safety measures and procedures and how many are riding a bike pillion or otherwise. Some motorbikes have several children perched on them. So we're going to continue the conversation after this, but keep those thoughts coming. Would raising the minimum age for licenses make a difference? What else would you like to see for safer roads? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us, and keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.